You're listening to Gloria Minot Presents.
My guest, Ronald Phillips. The book, A Spy Named Orphan, The Enigma of Donald MacLean. The author of Spymaster, Brad Thor, wrote this about the book. From his riveting recreation of the world atmosphere to his in-depth exploration of such a brilliant, troubled, and duplicitous character, Ronald Phillips has created a masterpiece. The rich renderings of secret assignations, smuggled documents, damning intelligence, and brilliant code-breaking will delight, that is, lovers of fiction and non-fiction alike. Picture Eric Larson meets John le Carré, and you have only begun to scratch the surface of this absolutely gripping book. Mr. Phillips, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining me. So first of all, how did Donald MacLean get the name Orphan?
He got the name Orphan. He was recruited by a brilliant Soviet recruiter in Britain in the 1930s who spotted that he was a lonely figure. He was his father had just died, and he needed the praise and reassurance, as the psychological recruiter put it, that belonging to the ring that spied for the Soviets gave him. So Orphan became a fitting name for this lonely, solitary orphan, which indeed he was.
When one thinks of British spies who were double agents, to me, the name Kim Philby comes to mind. Are there parallels between him and Philby?
Well, it was Kim Philby who first realized that MacLean would make a very good spy, and he asked him to supper in the summer of 1934 and suggested that MacLean, who was at that point intending to go and teach English in the Soviet Union, should in fact follow his other career path than go into the British Foreign Office, the equivalent of the State Department, and spy for the KGB. And so they were wrapped up together, though interestingly they didn't meet after that meeting in 1934 until the 1960s, when Philby followed MacLean to Moscow, at which point he, as Kim Philby had to betray everybody in his life, went off with MacLean's wife of 20 years standing. So that was the ultimate betrayal. The man he recruited, he then pinched his wife.
And Philby died in the then Soviet Union some years ago.
Yes, they both died in the 1980s. What's interesting to one of the many interesting things about MacLean is that where Philby felt rather useless once he defected to the Soviet Union, MacLean found a new lease of life. He'd been acting out alcoholically in his last few positions in Egypt and in London, though the Foreign Office failed to spot that there were problems here. But when he got the Soviet Union, he was no longer a divided figure, and he worked hard in foreign policy and became a whole man again for his last 30 years of life.
A Spy Named Orphan, The Enigma of Donald MacLean by Ronald Phillips. I'm talking to him this morning about that. Let's follow up on his descent into alcoholism. Just talk a little about that, because that was a really, really horrible time in his life.
It was a terrible time. It started when he was based in Washington, where he was from 1944 to 48. And 1944, the Second World War was still going on, and he gave away all sorts of material. He gave away the shape of Europe after the war. He gave away all the plans between Churchill and Roosevelt for the Yalta Conference. And he worked hard at both being in the Foreign Office and being a spy, because he felt unified, the Soviet Union were on our side. After the war, when the Cold War got going, the two sides of him began to pull apart, because he was undoubtedly a devoted diplomat and in many ways a patriot to Great Britain. And when he worked on atomic energy policy, most tellingly, after the war, he started then to drink very heavily. There are reports of him at smart Washington dinner parties criticizing his American host, criticizing the Secretary of State, Jimmy Burns. But again, this was all the gossip of Washington, but never got onto his file. There were never any official complaints. The final collapse came when he was in Cairo between 1948 and 1950. In 1949, he broke a fellow diplomat's leg in a scuffle on the banks of the Nile. And in 1950, he and a journalist friend of his got blind drunk and trashed the American ambassador's secretary's flat in Cairo, completely broke it up. Astonishingly, although he came home deemed to be suffering from a nervous breakdown, again, this didn't get onto his file. The British ambassador rang the American ambassador and it was all hushed up. So he came back to Britain, had some treatment, and 6 months later was made head of the American department in London, which was just at the beginning of the Korean War. So again and again, they failed to spot him, even when he was going through these terrible alcoholic incidents.
A Spy Named Orphan, The Enigma of Donald MacLean by Ronald Phillips. A promotion that he seemed to have been somewhat of a golden boy, because he got repeatedly promoted during his service.
He absolutely did. As I say, none of these transgressions were noticed at all. He looked the part. He was very tall, very elegant, always very beautifully dressed. There was no vetting at all in the Foreign Office until after his defection. There wasn't even a security officer until the Second World War. So he was able to smuggle these documents out while working extremely hard. He had a watchmaker's mind. He was able to condense and analyze material second to none. And so they did, because the British establishment could not believe that even when they knew there'd been a spy in the Washington embassy, they never believed it could be MacLean, because he was so much the perfect British diplomat.
Take us back to the morning of May 25th, 1951, when he was age 38.
That was indeed his 38th birthday. They'd realized, thanks to a remarkable piece of American code-breaking, which decoded a telegram sent some 7 years earlier, saying that Homer, which was the spy they were looking for, was then his MacLean's code name, would be coming to New York often to visit his pregnant wife in 1944. So this was the smoking gun, that the spy in question had a pregnant wife. So he was being followed by the Secret Service, who in London, where he was based, rather obviously followed. A lot of people commented as he strode around London, this figure in a trilby hat and raincoat puffing after him. He knew that he'd been identified, but they weren't going to bring him in, because they didn't have the evidence they caught him on was too secret to be in court. So they were trailing him and hoping he'd give himself away. Philby had got wind of this, who's himself based in Washington, and sent his friend Guy Burgess back to London to say, you've got to get him out, because if he cracks up, he will give us all away. And they came up with a scheme, the illegal Russian set up in London, and Burgess, whereby they found a ship that sailed along the coast of France at weekends, leaving on a Friday night, and put in at Saint Malo for breakfast, though passports didn't need to be looked at. So on Friday, the 25th of May, 1951, MacLean's 38th birthday, he went to work as normal. He had a very jolly birthday lunch with a friend of his. He bumped into another friend in Soho as he was going to lunch, and the friend commented how well he looked compared to when he'd last been seen in his cups. And he went home that night for his birthday supper, said he had a friend coming to supper, The friend came to supper, and that friend was Guy Burgess, though he came under a different name. And after supper, he kissed his two small boys goodnight, and they set off, announced they were going to visit a sick friend there, nearby, but instead drove to Southampton and got on this boat. And the next day, they assumed the ports would be watched, but in fact, the British establishment were so embarrassed by their discovery, they weren't watching the ports. And the next day, they jumped ship on the north coast of France, took a train to Paris, took another train to Bern in Switzerland, and 2 days later, flew to Prague and were behind the Iron Curtain, and were not seen again by a Westerner for 5 years. Reappeared at the press conference.
The Magnificent Five, who were they?
The Magnificent Five were Donald MacLean, Guy Burgess, Kim Philby, a spy called John Cancross, who worked in the Treasury and then in the Bletchley Park operation in the war, and Anthony Blunt, who was the surveyor of the Queen's pictures and worked in MI5, our Secret Service, during the war. And they all met at Cambridge. They were all recruited separately by this brilliant recruiter I mentioned earlier, and they were the most effective spy ring ever to work as a unit.
A Spy Named Orphan, The Enigma of Donald MacLean by Ronald Phillips. That's the name of the book. Of course, it provides an inside look at this era and vividly paints the impact of espionage on family, country and society, and the long-lasting effects it had on British-American relations. So wrote one reviewer. Mr. Phillips, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for speaking to me.
For more information about Gloria Minot Presents, go to Gloria Minot Presents, one word,